This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. On the campus of the University of California, San Diego, Amarachi Metu has just started her final semester.
I am from the Bay Area, born and raised there all my life. I don't claim a particular hometown because I moved around a lot growing up. I am a first-generation American, a first-gen student here at UCSD, a proud Nigerian.
Metu's major is global health, and she's a student journalist and a senior resident assistant. But in the fall of 2016, she started noticing some strange flyers popping up on campus.
The flyers said things such as, "Let's become great again, our future belongs to us, promote your heritage, our destiny is ours." And they just had traditional Grecian statues on them, and you could not walk around campus without seeing them in any of the public posting zones where people normally put flyers.
And then as classes were starting up just a few weeks ago,
this was the very first week of class. It was the second day of class on the first week. And a member of Identity Europa, which is a white supremacist group that was founded in San Diego in March of 2016, entered into the classroom. And initially, we didn't expect anything. He just came in, said, "Do you mind if I sit in on this class?" And of course, my professor said, "Sure, it's a public university. Anyone can sit in on the class."
And so he walks into the class, he sits down, then what happens?
He's just quiet, and we didn't think anything of it because he was just sitting there on his phone. We were like, oh, maybe he's just, I don't know, taking notes or on the phone or whatever. We didn't think anything of it. But it wasn't until he was there for about 20 minutes, and then he got up to leave, and then he flashed a badge at our professor, and then he said, "We'll be watching," or something to those lines.
The badge he flashed had the letters IE on it.
IE, Identity Europa, that's the group that's been coming to campus for the last couple of months.
Identity Europa is a neo-Nazi and white supremacist organization established in March 2016 by Nathan D'Amigo, who was infamous for punching a woman at a UC Berkeley protest in April 2017, as well as for serving 5 years in prison for assaulting a Muslim cab driver. The group's motto is, "You will not replace us." And they were the ones behind the flyering campaign, which is part of a broader national effort they call Project Siege. Here's D'Amigo in September 2016 in a video on YouTube with just under 3,000 views.
Yesterday, Identity Europa launched Project Siege on colleges and institutions across the country. The purpose of Project Siege is that never again will our voice not be heard in these institutions, in the hallways, in the classrooms. We're going to get on the college, we are going to talk to students there, we're going to show them what the teachers have omitted from their lectures and what has been omitted from their textbooks that is creating this false anti-white narrative. And we're going to change the world by doing this.
Initially, I felt shocked. I didn't really think this is going to impact me in any way. I just thought, why? What is the reason? What is the purpose? Are they trying to incite fear? Are they trying to establish a place? Are they trying to suggest a hierarchy? Are they trying to convey that they're surveying the campus in any sort of way that anyone should feel less comfortable in this space? But as a Black woman, my next thought was, am I safe in this classroom? Am I safe on this campus anymore?
And I think there are lots of students who are probably wondering the same thing. Today, a look at the increase of white supremacist groups and activity on college campuses. What do they want, and is it working? According to the Anti-Defamation League, between the fall of 2016 and the fall of 2017, there was a 258% increase in white supremacist incidents on college campuses across the country. Jonathan Greenblatt is the national director and CEO of the Anti-Defamation League, and he helps us break down these numbers.
So the ADL, which has been tracking white supremacists and racists of all ilk, literally for more than 100 years, we pay attention to what they're doing on colleges and universities. We've seen everything from flyering to tabling or hosting tables at open events, to speakers and programs that focus on quote-unquote white culture, to even outright recruiting. So this is very real. This is a serious issue, and it's important that we talk about it.
So a couple things. I think a lot of folks would think when they think about white supremacists, they think either of the sort of Richard Spencer type, which mm-hmm. is dressed in the white shirt with mm-hmm. the khaki pants, or they think KKK, pointed white hats, etc. Is it obvious who they are on college campuses? Is it that clear to students, or is it more nefarious?
So that's a great question. So it used to be that people sort of racists, anti-Semites, and hardened bigots. They hid behind white hoods, and they met under the cover of night, like in some rural cornfield, right? Today, they're out in the open, if you will, hiding behind maybe their smartphones. But they've gone from boots to suits, from camo to khakis, in an attempt to, if you will, mainstream or try to present themselves as a legitimate part of the public conversation. So it's very problematic and different than what it used to be.
This is an academic environment. We know school shootings have gone, unfortunately, we deal with those on a weekly basis. Are you looking at this increase in white supremacist behavior and almost thinking that could also increase the potential for violence in these campuses?
It certainly can. So we just had an incident last month where a UPenn freshman home in Los Angeles for the winter break was stabbed to death by another young man with white supremacist leanings. This is the Blaze Bernstein case that happened just outside of LA. We had a case in the fourth quarter of last year where a high school student shot his girlfriend and his girlfriend's parents, murdering the parents. This was in suburban Washington, D.C. This young man had ties to the white supremacist movement, and the parents apparently object to the girlfriend dating him because of his racism and hate.
And there are also increasingly a lot of young white men who are, to use the word, being radicalized, to incite this type of violence.
Well, I'm glad you said that. So that is the way we need to be thinking about this, which is in the same way that you see ISIS recruiters and Al-Qaeda recruiters attempt to radicalize young Muslims and play upon feelings of alienation that they may feel, play upon young people's developing sense of self-worth and tie it to a very kind of radicalized view of Islam. So you see these white supremacists identifiably trying to go after young people, high school and college students, who again are dealing with issues of teenage alienation, issues of self-worth, and try to tie it towards some exalted view of quote-unquote white culture. And I should say it's critical to note that indeed many of these groups, and I don't want to mention all of their names, but they celebrate and they elevate violence, racial violence, anti-Semitic violence. Literally, they hold this up. So should it surprise us that a gay Jewish teen is stabbed to death by another white supremacist when he self-identifies that way? Probably not. Probably not.
What's the role of the university in this? Because I've spoken at a ton of universities, and there's this sort of tension between what we allow as free speech and part of the conversation and what their role is to sort of curb these visitors, I suppose, or this activity on their campuses. What's their job?
So this is a very tough issue to wrestle with. So we at the ADL are fierce advocates for the First Amendment. And I think some universities have suffered with the imposition of safe spaces where you can't talk about tough issues. But here's the thing. A lack of context has consequences. And so putting these views out there as if they were just part of a mainstream conversation, we find very problematic. Now, again, I think it's important to note, hateful speech, whether we like it or not, is certainly covered by the First Amendment. It certainly makes us uncomfortable, but it's part of the trade-off of living in a robust democracy. However, let's note, there's a difference between hateful speech and harmful speech. So the freedom of expression does not encompass the freedom to incite violence, right? Freedom of speech isn't freedom to slander people or stereotype them in a manner that, again, may cause harm. So I'll acknowledge I don't envy the university administrator has to negotiate these issues. But I think the universities have a moral responsibility to create an environment in which everyone feels, not that they shouldn't feel intellectually challenged, but they ought to feel absolutely safe.
These administrations are going to have to look and take seriously the fact that students are actually really seriously concerned for their safety.
That's journalist Candace Byrne. She lives in Denton, Texas, which is on the outskirts of Dallas-Fort Worth, and she's been chronicling the rise in white supremacist activity on college campuses in Texas, which she says have been increasing since the 2016 election.
I started to see from my friends on my Facebook feed, hey, you know, watch out, these flyers came up, pictures coming through on my Instagram, just all of my social media. We had a number that would just say things like blood and soil. You know, you can trace its lineage sort of directly back to Nazis and white supremacist movements. Another one is, you know, this is a notice to all citizens of the United States of America. It is your civic duty to report illegal aliens. So this is really happening at campuses across the state, SMU, UTD, UTA, just a number of campuses across the state are seeing this activity.
Texas has actually seen the largest uptick in white supremacist activity on college campuses of any state. According to the Anti-Defamation League, there have been 61 reported incidents since the fall of 2016. Byrne doesn't think that there are necessarily more white supremacists than there were a year ago, but instead, they feel emboldened.
I can't confirm for sure, but we strongly suspect that it really is just some of the same small clusters of guys who are just traveling across the state and hitting campuses. They hit college campuses not so much to recruit students, but as really to create a propaganda campaign of fear and harassment, because they know that college campuses are a hotspot for more progressive organizing and have been sort of historically. What they would say and what they use is that they hope to trigger the left-leaning students on campus. They're sowing fear.
How exactly do these groups operate on college campuses?
Up in Denton, I spoke to a couple of students. Both of them were Jewish. Both of them talked about, you know, experiencing direct harassment, you know, as a result of these incursions on campus by white supremacists. I know one in particular, she was filmed by some of these guys. You know, another student talked about moving away. She described a culturally passive response to white supremacy in North and Central Texas. And that sort of was an animating reason for her to move. You know, another thing about Texas State that is interesting is it is what happened with Rudy Martinez. Rudy Martinez wrote a very controversial column for the student newspaper there called Your DNA is an Abomination. And really, he was writing to sort of challenge the construct of whiteness, and it caused a lot of backlash. And basically, what these guys with Patriot Front did is they took his face, they put it on a flyer, and they doxed him. They took his home phone number, not only that, but the phone number of his employer, his address, basically his personal information. They put it on a flyer with his face, and they posted that flyer up all around San Marcos. And so he, you know, became, as a result of that, really worried for his safety. That's really the tactic that these guys like to employ, is they like to target specific left-leaning students that they don't like their ideas, and they go after them usually with this tactic of doxing, and a lot of times it's online.
We've been talking about white supremacist activity on college campuses. During the last academic year, there was a 258% increase in white supremacist activity from the previous year. And Texas is the state with the most reported incidents. But if you ask the white supremacist group Identity Europa, which UC San Diego student Amarachi Metu described earlier, they'll tell you they aren't white supremacists at all. And in fact, we did reach out to them, and we heard from Patrick Casey, their CEO. He said, quote, "We're not white supremacists. We're identitarians. Do your homework next time. We do not have members at UCSD. No IE member has ever interrupted a class, and we don't have IE badges." Casey went on to say, "We haven't created an unsafe environment because we're an explicitly nonviolent organization. If people find exposure to our positions traumatic, they do not belong in college." But, and this is Tanzina speaking, if you listen to the messaging from these groups, including Vanguard America and Patriot Front, the groups that are going around to different colleges in Texas, they're pretty explicit about why they're doing what they're doing. They say that white people are being persecuted and that colleges and universities are at the heart of the problem. Here's a Vanguard America rally outside the Texas State Capitol in Austin in June to give you a sense of their message.
There is a difference between us and them, and it's that no matter how outnumbered we are, and how many us there are, we always stand and fight. Every single one of us, no matter how outnumbered we are, we'll look at them in the face and say, they can't have it. because it's ours. It belongs to us. Never let that be misunderstood. So I say to all of you Texans, to all the white people, tomorrow belongs to us.
Yeah!
I think if you were to ask them, they would give you some kind of PR spin on it about, you know, how they really just want to bring out their European heritage.
That's the journalist Candace Burned again.
I don't think that they would tell you that. Oh yeah, we're neo-Nazi white supremacists and we want genocide. But it is clear what their actual agenda is. And even if they say that that's not what their agenda is, it's the end result of what they're wanting.
The responses from college administrators in Texas have varied. Southern Methodist University in Dallas posted pictures online of people they caught on camera while they were flyering white supremacist messages on campus. Texas State University did the exact opposite, refusing to release the names of people they caught posting pictures of Rudy Martinez, the student who wrote the inflammatory article. Byrne says that universities often feel they can't respond because of issues of free speech.
There's a lot of criticisms being made by people right now about white supremacists and protecting their speech, but there's another side of this as well that I think is just as important to emphasize. It almost sounds like the free speech debate becomes a justification for just kind of allowing Nazi activity to happen. And I don't think we should see universities protecting the identities of these people. There's really no need for that. They're not students. Passive responses to white supremacy is what can create the cultural and social conditions by which these guys can begin to come from a position of power.
It's largely been up to the students to respond, if you can believe that. Some by lobbying their universities to be more proactive. Other students have sought to seek out the identities of white supremacist members and release them publicly, a practice known as doxing. Others have joined local pockets of Antifa or anti-fascist resistance. But back in California, Amarachi Metu has navigated a very different campus since the most recent incident.
It's interesting interacting with white folks on campus. Whereas before, if a white person, specifically a white male, were to come up to me, I wouldn't think about it. I would just be like, oh. But now the first initial thought is, are they going to do something? Is this someone who has like particular views? Do they expect me to do something? Do they expect me to react a certain way? How can I protect myself in this if something were to happen? And that's a shame because quite often it will be like, I remember there was an incident that happened a couple weeks ago where I dropped a $20 bill and I didn't know. And this white masculine presenting person picked it up and tapped me on the shoulder, and initially like my heart dropped, and I turned around and I was like, oh my God. And then he was like, you dropped your $20 bill. And I was like, oh, thank you. But that wasn't the first thing that came to my mind.
Is there anyone on campus speaking out about this and maybe the increase in these incidents? Is the university doing anything? Are white students stepping up to the plate and saying, hey, this is, you know, we condemn this?
It's predominantly been the work on behalf of students of color and on behalf of student journalists on campus who have been saying a lot of things, at least saying things publicly. But we've yet to hear anything from the university administrations explicitly stating that they denounce white supremacist movements on campus. And that's probably because they just launched their new free speech website where they outline the difference between free speech and hate speech and what we need to do to encourage free speech on campus.
Did that website make you feel, did it reassure you that you'd be okay?
No, I think it actually made me more frustrated because there's been a big debate within the student population and with faculty administrators about how we support free speech and whether all free speech actually helps people or harms people, and how the harm can actually impact a broader community in ways that never thought possible. So things like a white supremacist movement coming onto campus, indicating that they were superior in any way, how that might impact black and brown students on campus who will no longer feel safe because all of a sudden their humanity is threatened. But I think if anything, the student that came into the classroom or identity in Europa in any way didn't take away our resolve or our purpose in any way. And if anything, they might have empowered us to start speaking up for things to a greater extent and make sure that we're aware of our environments, what's affecting us, and know when to speak up, say something, and act on our own behalf through our own agency.
We reached out to UC San Diego for comment on this story. They came back with the following. Quote, like many other colleges and universities throughout the country, UC San Diego has been targeted by hate groups who seek to spread their propaganda, taking advantage of our policies protecting freedom of expression. UC San Diego unequivocally condemns all language and actions that espouse and support hate, as well as any doctrines that elevate one group above another. The antidote to hate speech is more speech, speaking out against intolerance and bigotry, and the one the university will continue advocating. You can read their full statement on our website at thetakeaway.org. Our thanks to Amarachi Metu, a student at UC San Diego, for sharing her story, as well as journalist Candace Byrne and Jonathan Greenblatt from the Anti-Defamation League.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.